All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Warning. Check the Locks podcast is a true crime podcast and may contain graphic descriptions of violence, murder, sexual assault, and more. Check the Locks podcast is not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Welcome back to Check the Locks podcast. As always, I'm John Connor saying thank you for joining us this week as we dive into yet another truly terrifying true crime case. Before we get started, you may notice that it is just me doing a little solo episode for you this week. Olivia unfortunately got bogged down with schoolwork and we had some scheduling stuff, so really wanted to be here. Unfortunately, we just couldn't make it work for the both of us, and definitely did not want to skimp out or, you know, miss an episode or anything like that. I've still got a really good story. We're going to do a two-parter for you. So Olivia will be back with us for the second part of this case to, you know, give her opinion and breakdown on it. We can still talk it through and do our deadbolt tests and things of that nature. So don't worry, she will be back. This upcoming next week or so is going to be a little weird for us. Today is actually my birthday, and I did want to give a huge shout out to everybody in the Facebook group for reaching out and leaving some love and wishing me a happy birthday. It is my big 40th. So the fact that so many people were so kind and took the time out of their day to wish me a happy birthday, it really did make it special. So thank you so very much for that. It is truly appreciated. With that, Olivia is actually going to be traveling and coming to Nashville. So it'll be the very first time since we started doing this podcast that we're going to be in the same room together, which will be extremely cool. I am looking forward to it. But in order to accommodate, make sure we still have episodes coming out, we are going to be splitting this case. So part one is going to be dropping today. And then the second half of this case will actually be dropping the following Monday. And that's just to kind of accommodate travel schedules and things like that. So that's one of the reasons that we're splitting this case up. But the other reason, I'll be 100% honest with you, this case is super interesting. You know, with it being February and, you know, being Black History Month and things of that nature, I always try to, you know, at least get one case out that may be on theme for the month or something like that. And we're actually going back to the civil rights era. And as I went through this case and kind of dug into the details, I was super surprised that I was not familiar with it. And it feels like a case that more people should know about. And so I wanted to make sure that I highlighted that. We went through it. And again, with a case like this, I like to make sure that we're really giving it the time so we're not kind of rushing through things, anything like that. Because, again, I do think the work that is being done in the case that we're going to talk about is super important. And again, I just think it's, you know, one of those cases that everyone should know about. So, again, please forgive us for the little bit of a weird, you know, schedule or how we're breaking it down. It's just so we can still put out the episodes, accommodate travel and things of that nature. So super happy to be here with you. Super happy to break down this week's case. And we will go ahead. I'll just go ahead and stop with the Gabby Gabby, get to the Stabby Stabby, and we will jump right on in. This week, we're headed to the town of Philadelphia, Mississippi, the year 1964. Now, the early 1960s was a turbulent point in Mississippi's history. The state's residents were strictly segregated, and during this time, the social, political, and economic rights of African Americans were suppressed, many times through acts of violence and/or other forms of intimidation. In fact, in 1964, membership in the Mississippi Ku Klux Klan was soaring, reaching more than 10,000 members, all of which strictly opposed the civil rights movement. especially when it came to outsiders advocating for a change coming to their home state. One such outsider was 24-year-old New Yorker Michael Schwerner. Schwerner was a native New Yorker born on November 6, 1939. He would eventually attend Cornell University, where he led a successful campaign to integrate his fraternity. After graduation, Schwerner would go on to attend the Columbia School of Social Work, but he would grow frustrated at the school's approach, believing their program didn't seem to address the root cause of poverty. Schwerner would eventually drop out before joining the Congress for Racial Equality, or CORE, in 1963. Now, in that same summer, there was a bombing at the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama, and because of this, Schwerner asked to be transferred to a position in the South, feeling that it was the place where their work could do the most good. And in November of 1963, Schwerner and his wife Rita were chosen to run the Mississippi Summer Project in Meridian. Schwerner helped with a voter registration campaign and other activist activities, and because of this, Michael Schwerner found himself on the Klan's radar. After all, a Jewish outsider advocating for civil rights was against everything the KKK stood for. Now, throughout the summer of 1964, the Klan would set fire to 20 black Mississippi churches, one of which was Neshoba County's Mount Zion Baptist Church. This particular church had been targeted because Michael Schwerner had spent time working there. On June 16th, members of the Klan descended on members of the congregation who were meeting there, savagely beating several attendees before setting the building on fire. But the attackers would later learn that their target had not been in attendance. Schwerner had actually traveled to Oxford, Ohio to train a group of Freedom Summer volunteers, so a new trap would be set. And when he returned to Mississippi, Schwerner was told about what had happened at that church. So he, along with two other volunteers, headed to Neshoba County to see the damage for themselves. Those two men were James Chaney and Andrew Goodman. Chaney, like Schwerner, worked for CORE. Andrew Goodman was a college student who had volunteered to help with voter registration and civil rights education throughout the summer project. On Sunday, June 21st, the three men were driving through Philadelphia, Mississippi, when they noticed flashing lights behind them. It was Neshoba County Sheriff's Deputy Cecil Price. Sheriff Price, who was 27 at the time, was a former dairy salesman. He had become the fire chief before moving into the role of sheriff's deputy. Not surprisingly, Price was also a member of the Klan and had an immense disdain for people of color. He was known for terrorizing Neshoba County's black residents. In one instant, he arrived at a roadhouse bar popular with African Americans, and once inside, he drew his gun, demanding the men get their hands on the wall and that the women beg like dogs. In short, Sheriff Deputy Price was a vile human being. It was around 5 p.m. when the three men were stopped while driving a light blue CORE station wagon. Price accused the men of speeding, and all three were promptly arrested. Schwerner, Chaney, and Goodman were taken to the local police station and placed in holding cells. While in lockup, they noticed that the fines for speeding were posted on the station wall, and they asked if they could simply pay the fine and be on their way. But Sheriff Price denied the request, stating that they needed to wait for the justice of the peace to arrive and collect the fine correctly. Schwerner requested to make a phone call but was denied. Sheriff Price would then leave the jail. Now, due to the racial tension of the time, if an organizer didn't return, the CORE had a standardized procedure in place. Part of this procedure was to call local jails and police stations to make sure that their staff weren't being detained. Minnie Herring, the jailer's wife, would later claim that no phone call was received. However, the CORE's phone record would show a call made to the Philadelphia, Mississippi jail at around 5:30 p.m. that day. Now, at around 10 p.m., Sheriff Price returned to the jail, most notably without the Justice of the Peace. He collected the speeding fine and released Schwerner, Goodman, and Cheney, telling all three men to get out of his county. Sadly, they would never be seen alive again.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
By the early morning of June 22nd, the Congress for Racial Equality had not heard from their volunteers. So Corps reported the disappearance to the Department of Justice, who immediately asked the FBI to become involved. Attorney General Robert Kennedy requested the FBI take the lead on the investigation, but there was a problem. In 1964, Mississippi was the only state without a central FBI office. So on the 22nd, agents from the New Orleans office arrived and began a kidnapping investigation. They blanketed the area and began conducting intensive interviews. In fact, over the next few days, more than 200 agents would be dispatched to Mississippi. And their hard work seemed to pay off quickly. By late afternoon on June 23rd, agents had received some disturbing information that led them to a wooded area. While investigating, they made a shocking discovery. There, in the brush, was the burnt-out body of the Corps station wagon, the same vehicle that Schwerner, Goodman, and Cheney had been seen traveling in. The car had been set ablaze and was still smoldering at the time that the agents discovered it. Reality set in. This case was no longer a rescue mission, but a mission to find the bodies of the missing men. And the discovery of the vehicle led FBI agents to give the case an official name, M.I. Burn, from Mississippi Burning. At this point, the case was beginning to draw national attention, but this was because both Schwerner and Goodman were actually white Northerners. And Michael Schwerner's wife, Rita, took the opportunity to shift focus onto overlooked victims, telling the media that the slaying of black men in Mississippi was not news, and that it was only because her husband and Andrew Goodman were white that a national alarm had been sounded. The FBI continued their investigation throughout July. Investigators searched wooded areas, fields, swamps, and rivers. And authorities would ultimately find the remains of several bodies, just not the ones that they were looking for. In total, the remains of 8 African-American men were discovered. 2 would later be identified as Henry D. and Charles Moore. Both were college students who had been kidnapped, beaten, and murdered in May of 1964. Another body was discovered wearing a Corps t-shirt. Sadly, the remaining 5 bodies would never be identified. Agents had discovered plenty of victims, just not the ones that they were looking for. And at the same time, the FBI agents were searching for Schwerner, Goodman, and Cheney, but they were also putting pressure on known members of the Klan. At the request of President Lyndon Johnson, a field office was opened in Jackson, Mississippi, and a comprehensive analysis would be done to investigate any local KKK members. But 6 weeks later, after a tip from a likely informant, investigators would finally catch a break. So we're going to stop right there for the first half of this case. And again, we will dive into it a little bit deeper in next week's kind of wrap everything up. But, you know, I did just want to take a moment to acknowledge the work of Schwerner and Goodman and Cheney and Rita and all the people involved in this story. You know, you think about where we are now as a country and a lot of the rights that we have and the things that we fought for, that foundation was laid by, you know, some of the people that we're talking about in this week's case. And I think that's why this was so, I don't know, it just kind of called to me. I thought it was a good one to go over this week. And I love these historical cases anyway. But, you know, just as kind of a reminder of, like, you always have to fight for the disenfranchised, for the people who are, you know, considered less than or second class, right? Like, you want to be a voice and an advocate for those people. And through the work that, you know, groups like CORE were doing and these volunteers, you know, they were doing this work at a time where it could very well cost you your life. And for many folks, and including Schwerner and Goodman and Cheney, it very well did. And so, you know, I don't know. I think this is just an important story to tell. And again, I was really surprised that I was not aware of this. And I just thought it would be, you know, a good one to share. So, you know, I'm really excited to see what y'all think of the first part of the case. Again, Olivia and I will be back next Monday. We're going to go through it together. She's going to get caught up on everything so we can have a really, you know, in-depth conversation about it. I will tell you, you know, on my Deadbolt test, just as kind of like a midway point, a story like this is, you know, always going to be, you know, 9 or close to 10 for me. And that's really because, you know, we may not see these hate groups in the way that we did before, right? The Klan now may not be riding around with the bed sheets on their head and stuff like that, but that's just because they've changed, right? That's because now they wear suits and they're on social media and they've learned how to rebrand and they've learned marketing. But these groups and the message and the hate that they perpetuate is still very much active and still very much out there, you know, looking to bring people into this like mindset of hatred towards another and, you know, this feeling of superiority and things of that nature. And it's just, you know, it's just sad. And it kind of breaks my heart to know that that still exists. And, it, you know, you think about how far we've come as a society and still all the work that we have to do. And hopefully, you know, continuing in those advancements in the way that, you know, Schwerner and Goodman and Cheney and, you know, the other people involved in the way that they worked towards those advancements. So, again, definitely looking forward to getting into the second half of this case and breaking it down, but want to know your thoughts. As always, you can let us know, reach out to us on Instagram, Check the Locks Pod, find us on Twitter, Check the Locks. If you're not in our Facebook group, come hang out with us. We'd absolutely love to have you learn a little bit more about you, hear what you think about the cases, things of that nature. I've said it a million times, but it's the best place on the internet. So come hang out with us. We would love to have you as part of that community. As always, we love to hear your feedback on the show as well, right? So whether you're sending us an email, that's contact@checkthelockspod.com. You can leave us an Apple review. If you leave us a 5-star review, we'd love to read those on the show as well. If you listen on Spotify, you can leave a Spotify comment. We'll read those too. You can also, you know, either call into the number in the description on the episode that you're listening to now, or leave us a voicemail at checkthelockspod.com. Either way, again, we'd love to hear your voice. We'd love to hear from you, your feedback, things of that nature. So please reach out to us any way that you can. We love to have you and your opinions be part of what we do here at Check the Locks. And as always, if you like what we do, you want to help support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron. Head over to patreon.com/checkthelocks and get signed up today. We've got a lot of great tiers, exclusive benefits, coffee mugs, stickers, things like that. Plus, you get the episodes commercial free. So if you love Check the Locks but you hate ads, Patreon is the way to go. So again, if you like what we do, you want to help us keep the lights on, that's patreon.com/checkthelocks to get signed up today. And if you can't financially support the show, we definitely understand. Just listening, sharing what we do with your friends and family means just as much, if not more. So if that's what you're doing, you're telling people to check out the podcast, send them a link, listen to this case, you know, just know that we appreciate it so very much. It really is all about that grassroots organic growth. And when you tell people to listen, that's exactly what it does. It helps new listeners find the show and helps us to grow the audience and the community. So if you're letting people know to check this out, just know that we appreciate you so very much. That's all that we have for this week's case, but please make sure that you are subscribed to Check the Locks on your favorite podcast app so that you never miss an episode. And again, so sorry about the wonky schedule, but we will be back next week with the continuation of this truly terrifying true crime case. But until then, don't forget to check the locks. We'll see you next week. Bye.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.